News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
8:06 coming up on 8:07. Mobile Mornings on a Monday, and a muggy Monday already, and it's going to turn to hot very, very soon. We've actually had a lot of food talk this morning already on Mobile Mornings, and we're going to keep that rolling here as we talk with Vince Allegri from Allegri Farm Market in Daphne and what's on the farm this week. Morning, Vince.
Good morning. How you doing this morning?
Hey, we are doing great here at FM Talk 106.5, and be even better once I get over to Allegri Farm Market and fill up a couple bags of your great produce. And what are you harvesting right now? I know week to week we see some minor changes, especially as we head towards the end of summer. What you got going on right now?
Today looks like we're picking a little more okra than we have been, and I think it's going to pick up. It's kind of been slow to get started, but it's getting there now.
That's great, and I'm trying to get the kids in on the okra game, but for right now, I kind of like that they're not into it yet. That means I get to eat all the okra that we end up with. Potatoes also, where do you stand there?
Yep, we're still grading some red and white potatoes. We're going to grade some more today, and we'll have them in store tomorrow morning again. Well, we have them today, the red ones, the white ones. I'll have some here in the morning.
That's great to hear. Let's talk a little collards too. You starting to get ready for the collards?
Yeah, we start getting the ground ready right now. September 1, we got the first 50,000 plants coming in. We'll transplant those, and then 30 days later, we have another 50,000 coming in, and then in between that, we'll plant direct seed and start planting the turnips also.
And when it's this hot, of course, nothing beats fresh, local fruit, and we have a fridge stocked full of it right now, which is very necessary. Talk a little bit about some of the fruit options you got going on.
Okay, we still have the Chilton County peaches. They're in the peak of their season, getting closer to the end. Athena cantaloupes and sugar babies, and they're coming from Kentucky now. They're very good and very sweet.
Man, sweet and juicy, you said, the sugar baby watermelons, and we're still in prime watermelon eating season. Also, tomatoes, and I'll talk a little bit more about tomatoes here in this segment, but what's your tomato selection looking like?
Okay, right now we're getting some Kentucky tomatoes in with the Kentucky watermelons, and I got to say, they're very good, but we also have our customers asking for the Sand Mountain. So this weekend, I'm going to bring some Sand Mountain in, and I think we're going to put two sections on the table and let them decide which one they like the best.
Ooh.
Because the Kentucky tomatoes are doing well.
Yeah, I like a little taste test. I like a little contest there. That's awesome. Let folks know where you're located and when they can come by.
Okay. We're at 181 and 64 right outside of Daphne. We're off of exit 38 on I-10 south, about 4 miles.
Easy to find. And then your hours, when can people come by?
8 to 6, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 on Sunday. Look forward to seeing anybody.
Yes, sir. Good as always, Vince. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Vince Allegri, and that's what's on the farm this week at Allegri Farm Market in Daphne. Saw this Yellowhammer News, and I wanted to get to this during one of our local news segments, but I didn't, but now's as good a time as any. So Alabama tomato growers celebrating the end of the U.S.-Mexico tomato suspension agreement. And they're celebrating the president's new 17% tariff on Mexican tomatoes, calling it a long overdue win for American agriculture. Yellowhammer spoke with some local farmers around the state, said the move levels the playing field after decades of being undercut by cheaper foreign imports. St. Clair County's Chad Smith and other members of the AFVGA said buyers are already showing renewed interest in Alabama-grown tomatoes, which support safer practices and, of course, support local economies. But a big boost for small farms and, they say, future generations of growers. So that's great. And that was a big part of the promises made with these tariffs, right, that it would bring not just manufacturing and jobs back to American citizens in the United States, but also help our farmers. We're seeing some movement also on the fishing front too, and much of that led from right down here with Chip Brown on the state level, and you see Katie Britt and Tuberville and some of the other local leaders who go up to D.C. Representing our local fishermen and shrimpers and oystermen as well. So I'm liking how things are going, and like you said, over the weekend there's just so much news to keep up with, and even on a Friday, which is usually a news dump day, where you put news out there that you don't necessarily want people to pay attention to if you're trying to kind of hide some stuff. I think that the schedule's just been so full with breaking news every day that Friday, at least from the Trump office, isn't necessarily much of a news dump day, because this Tulsi Gabbard, not just the allegations, but putting some of the material out there and saying more or less, I mean, she accused Obama and the Obama administration of a treasonous conspiracy, something that I had a clip from, is it Leslie Stahl from 60 Minutes when she was interviewing the president going into this latest election. And she was getting on to him for mentioning Biden's dementia, or mentioning his, you know, incapacitated mental state, which was obvious at times. And she was going, oh, there's no facts about that. There's no, like, you're just, that's a story that's not a real story. And he said, and she said, I forget how she asked. She was like, do you think that's the biggest story or something? He goes, no, the biggest story is that the Obama campaign spied on me, that they wiretapped Trump Tower. And you guys haven't said a word about it, and you're not looking into it. And she said, well, there's just no verifiable evidence. Like, basically, you're making stuff up here on 60 Minutes, and we won't stand for that. And I bet, and you've been looking through some of the media today, there's no shame. There's no changing of ways for the most part after 10 years of this.
Oh, yeah.
They're going about it the same way. 10
years with Trump alone. Yeah, so now I backtracked a little bit. So what I did this morning, this story, of course, number one in our three big things, Gabbard blowing the whistle on essentially the Obama administration, naming a lot of names and releasing some documents. That was on Friday. So the continuation of that story and her appearance yesterday on Fox led us to put this as the number one story in our three big things. Meanwhile, I go to NBCNews.com, CBSNews.com, CNN.com, ABCNews.com. On today's page,
The first workday since
the story drop. I'm saying that for today, there's no mention. There's no mention of the story. This is the National Intelligence Director making these claims against a former administration, and now you can say what you want, or you can have a political lean one way or the other, but you can't tell me you're going to ignore it altogether. It's not a story. That is asinine. Now, I do see, though, at the time, 24, some cases 36 hours ago, there were stories in reacting to all this in the New York Times 2 days ago. Okay, so the latest that the Times published it was Saturday. CNN, 2 days ago. The Hill, 2 days ago. So it was covered.
And so it did kind of serve as a news dump in a way for them.
It did.
We covered
That's all it was.
Yeah.
So they can
make a bad timing from Tulsi.
Yeah. They can take claim that, look, we covered it. But the fact that now it is Monday, like you say, the first. I guess I'm to believe that the New York Times, the Sunday edition of the New York Times, which is one of the most sold papers in the world, did it not have anything on this story at all?
And she was on TV yesterday, the director of national intelligence.
She's on Fox. I don't know if she got on anything else.
But the fact that she spoke, and her words were that the Obama administration committed possibly treasonous conspiracy, and the fact that that's not being covered, it's wild. And I posted again the other day, so the Epoch Times, which is another media outlet, and it's a lot of people don't consider it, you know, they kind of throw it into the loony bin with, like, you know, those on the left, they'll say, oh, that's from Breitbart, I'm not paying attention. Oh, that's from Zero Hedge, it must be complete bunk. And they kind of throw Epoch Times in that same well. But they had, you know, a chart, I think it was back in 2018, maybe, where they put up pictures of Obama and so many people in his administration, and it kind of broke this story years ago, and people have been saying since then that it's just completely made up, and there's more documents that are supposed to come out this week. So Friday, they made over 100 pages of memos, emails, and other material public. And kind of the timing of this, you know, they just, was it 2 weeks ago, put John Brennan front and center and James Comey front and center, and said that they had lied to Congress about a lot of this. Mm-hmm. And they have a smoking gun, at the very least, on John Brennan. But then you have Maureen Comey, a prosecutor with the Southern District of New York and daughter of James Comey, who played a leading role in the prosecution of Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. Yep. And even P. Diddy here recently. So she's let go last week. Right after that, you have this Wall Street Journal story come out about the birthday letter to Epstein.
Yeah.
And that was from reporters who a couple sites have pointed to past connections to like close nearby connections to Fusion GPS, which was the firm that the Hillary Clinton campaign used to hire Steele for the Steele dossier. Yeah. It's so convoluted, and there's so much going on in the back halls of D.C. And then
you think they'd hide it a little better than that.
And some of these same reporters that, well, I think it was Palazzolo or whatever his name, that did a lot of the legwork on this Russiagate hoax. We can call it a hoax. Trump's been calling it a hoax for a long time. He puts this Epstein story out, and there's just so many different twists and kind of turns in this. Now, there's a lot of people who are saying, well, this isn't going to go anywhere. It never does. What's that mean? Nothing ever happens. But at the very least, putting a little bit of more of a spotlight and maybe forcing, I don't know if you can force any of these journalists with the New York Times or ABC or CBS, or how about Jake Tapper, who just a couple months ago was acting like he was a real journalist again. I'd like to see if Tapper's done anything on this recently.
I think I saw somebody on Tapper. I watched a lot of stuff over the weekend, and I think I did see Tapper on Friday night, had a guest that was talking about it. I forget the conversation because my eyes are crossed at some point trying to keep up with all this.
But more or less, you had the 2016 campaign and Trump running, and you had the Steele dossier, which led a lot of people to think that that Trump was colluding with Russia. Mm-hmm. Remember the P tape and everything like that. We know the Steele dossier was complete bunk. We've known that for years. Now they're wondering if even the release of the quote-unquote hacked DNC servers, if that really was even Russia that hacked Podesta's email and got into the servers and released all that, or if they were trying to plant another smoking gun mm-hmm. by putting that out there. And you had the intelligence community under Obama say, yeah, Russia's not trying to hack yeah. our elections. They're not trying to, you know, change vote counts or anything like that. But they more or less hid that so that the speculation would continue. That's so that you'd get 2+ years of Trump under a microscope, being impeached, being even more hated by a lot of people. And
I think it was after the timeline. I know you've got something that's showing maybe a better timeline. Tell me if I'm wrong. They conclude that there's nothing there with Russia mm-hmm. and trying to interfere with the election one way or the other. And Trump wins the election. That's when it shifted, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's when Obama and or the administration or that's when they said, no, take that piece of information and do not release it. Do not release, because from this point on, we're going to generate a story that says
yeah.
otherwise.
Because they were apparently ready to roll if Hillary were to win and say, oh, it looks like actually everything was on the up and up.
Right. They had it out there in case.
And then Trump loses. They kind of cover up their own
Trump
assessment.
Wins.
I mean, Trump wins. They cover up their own assessment.
I mean, that's what it looks like.
And it was from top down. You know, Obama, who stayed in D.C. Presidents don't generally stay in Washington, D.C., when their time in office is up,
true.
Once his 2 terms was up. And we saw it in the Biden administration, how many of the same Obama people stuck on for that. But this is a massive story. And you have some honest journalists saying, this is a bigger story than what anyone has covered here in the last, you know, decade. There's people saying that it's obviously bigger than Watergate.
It is. Well, if everything is true or close to true, I think absolutely the weight of this definitely outweighs Watergate. Watergate was sensational because it was so big in the moment, but it you had nothing really to compare it to, I think, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of bombshell was kind of earth-shattering in the time. We had so much trust in our government, it seemed like, more than now, for sure. And so it seemed so big, but in comparison, it doesn't seem nearly as big as this.
No, treasonous conspiracy is what she's saying. And so where this goes, I don't know. And you'll have, and we'll see what Quinn's take is tomorrow.
I know he
was still a couple weeks ago on Twitter saying that while we were all talking Epstein, he was still saying that Trump was colluding with Russia more or less for 2016. So I can't wait to hear Quinn's thoughts on this tomorrow. But I know what a lot of people that see whatever they want to see through whatever prism it is they want to see it through are going to say, well, Russia was still trying to subvert the election. They had these troll farms that were on social media trying to convince people to vote for Trump, which every country is trying to, at the very least, you know, psyop Americans into social media into voting for the candidate they want to see him vote for. That's almost a non-story, but it reminds me, and we just kind of had a great resolution a few weeks ago, Douglas Mackey, who was one of the early online huge MAGA supporters that got a ton of supporters. Remember, they did throw him in jail for posting a meme that was a joke meme that was telling Hillary Clinton voters to vote on a different day than the actual election.
I remember that.
And they, UK style, tried to imprison him for that and saying that he was trying to affect the election. It's just insane kind of what we've gone through, at the very least, since the Obama administration and the level of shady backroom dealing they're doing to their own people. And then they almost got away with it. They might get away with it. I don't know. But at least finally someone's doing something about it.
You know, the emergence of Twitter and all that, too, all that social media played a role in this, too, with, you know, they didn't quite know how to handle it. It was like, well, we can handle the press. They got the press in their back pocket. Twitter comes along, and suddenly they're saying to the people at Twitter, hey, man, you need to calm this down, or we're going to, and then, you know, that was a lot of confusion at that time for those who generally manage a problem to manage it well.
Mm.
824 with Dan and Dalton. Good morning to you. Morning from Dan and Dalton on the text line. Butter Knife says, I'm not defending Obama, but he said he stayed in Washington, D.C., so his girls could finish school there, which is believable.
Well, maybe, Butter Knife, but his oldest daughter's 27, his youngest 24, so I guess 9 years ago would have been, what, 18 and 15. Youngest daughter went to USC. Obama still lives in D.C. I mean, I'm pretty sure he was there to maintain his grip, maybe more quietly than his... He was president of the United States, but maintained his grip on the levers of power. I don't think that's a very far stretch, but it is a believable thing, I guess, if you want to.
At the time, yeah.
Stay for his kids. Now, James says, nothing but distractions from the Epstein list. So isn't Obama given the same presidential immunity the Supreme Court just gave Trump? I don't know how far that immunity extends, but I can see you're scared there, James. I see you're worried about this.
Hang in there, buddy.
Hang in there.
830 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings with Dan and Dalton.
FM Talk 106.5 coming to the text line here in just a moment. 251-343-0106. Right now we head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louis Arata. Hey, Louis.
Hey, good hot day. How y'all doing?
We're good. And the only people having a rough time right now out there, probably a lot of folks that don't have AC in their vehicles. It'd be a tough time for that. If that's the case, you need to get to McConnell and get a different vehicle or get it fixed.
Hey, you can get it fixed or you can get a different vehicle. Man, we got a great service department back there. We'll take care of that little AC problem for you. No problem at all. And if you need a new car, great selection, McConnellAutomotive.com. Got those GM certifieds looking great out front. I'm sitting there looking at all of them. And got Yukons, AT4s, Denalis, got a 15-passenger van, traded in a bunch of cars yesterday. We'll have those on the web. I mean, Saturday we'll have those on the website. Don't forget, $10,000 off pickups and 0%. We got it going on at McConnell Automotive.
Yeah, if you're browsing and just kind of checking around every few days to see what's new out there with McConnell, you almost have to check every day with the trades and with you guys hitting the auction block. You've got new stuff all the time.
That's right. I mean, just check it out, McConnellAutomotive.com.
All right. Thank you, Louie.
Thank you.
Louie Raddup, go see him. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive. They're located on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65, and their website is McConnellAutomotive.com.
Ultra Runner on the text line says, we see the Dems' disregard for the rules of, and I'm trying to make this out. Basically, he says at the end, don't you think that Tulsi's findings are consistent with their public behavior? You know, her findings are her findings. Their behavior is their behavior. I don't know if they necessarily correlate perfectly together, but
I don't remember if this was on air or off air because they kind of blend together for us sometimes. But you were saying, you know, they thought they were kind of running things well with keeping Trump out of office, and almost no one thought that Trump would win that election in 2016, and they thought they had done enough groundwork to make him look like
suspicious.
Make him look suspicious at the very least.
Yeah, and then somebody that you would not trust being the president of your country. That's and there was a lot of people that felt that way, but of course, and Trump would give ammunition to the left as well with a lot of his remarks or the way they were taken.
But if they were ready to run this story from their own intelligence community after Hillary won the election, that Russia didn't actually hack the election and it was a free and fair and democracy works. Yay. But then their whole table was overturned when Trump wins. They start making mistakes.
Think of it like a letter. OK, so this letter that said nothing really happened here. We got it. The letter is in the envelope, and it's like we've concluded there's nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
And the letter's in the envelope, and then Trump wins. And now suddenly they're like, where's that letter? Don't mail it. Do not mail that. You ever mail something incorrectly to the wrong, you know, like the exact wrong thing went to the, you know, somebody that you didn't want to get that information. So it's like, don't mail that letter. And otherwise, do not make this statement that we've concluded there's nothing there because we're about to flip the narrative. That's Tulsi's allegations. And now we'll see how well she does trying to prove it. The other thing I talked about was some of the press is calling it kind of an Epstein diversion that Trump, even though Trump came out on Friday night, I guess he had it with the Wall Street Journal and said, go ahead and release.
Bondi on Friday night officially asked the courts to release at least grand jury testimony.
When it got to social media, Trump, COVID-19, I think they flipped out because they didn't have the answers, because they forever have had the answer on how do you take care of a narrative that's going to hurt your case. Well, they got the press in their pocket, so that's always taken care of. Once you had Twitter and social media, they were like, wait a minute, now we've got to put some guardrails on this. You saw the pressure they put on Twitter and the original founder and all that, and Facebook. Zuckerberg even says so much. So it's like when they could control everything, they were okay. Once they lost some of that control from social media, they kind of flipped out and got aggressive. And in this case right here, Dalton, it just seems that they were expecting Trump to be beaten, and then they could put the whole thing to bed.
And there's some Republicans, some pretty high-ranking Republicans, that are going to have to answer some hard questions, too. Because you had Tulsi yesterday saying, I can't believe this hasn't been put out before. It's so blatant what happened. But remember, you had that Senate committee, I think the Senate Intelligence Committee, maybe, and you had Tom Cotton, I think Marco Rubio, who were part of that, who came up with a different assessment than what Gabbard has here. And was that part of a conspiracy as well? I don't know. How Well, were the books already cooked in that case? I don't know, but
Trump was no friend of established Republicans at that time.
Mm-hmm.
He was not there. He was the people's guy. He wasn't their guy at all, right?
Right. And Marco has obviously worked his way back into the good graces of Trump.
Yeah, but what happened back in the day?
And Tom Cotton, you know, he was still taking shots at Tulsi Gabbard just last week. And it seemed like the hit pieces on Tulsi Gabbard, while there were many before she was put into office, put into the cabinet, they, for some reason, started talking about her a whole lot more again last week. And it's just kind of strange how things like that tend to happen.
Yeah, it's strange and it's not strange.
Mark in Westmobile says, as a conservative, it's hard for me to get excited that they've uncovered this evidence of a coup because nothing ever comes from it. No one will be charged and no one will be held accountable. The criminal left and the Clintons literally get away with murder and nothing is ever done about it. And hey, I understand the cynicism. But to say nothing is ever done about it, whatever particular result you're looking for, maybe you want to see the whole administration, the whole Obama administration behind bars. Yeah, maybe that won't happen. But you can't say that nothing's being done about it. You have the director of national intelligence now putting it out there on the table and promising to release more. And you have a smoking gun from the former CIA director for lying before Congress about their assessment of the of phone tapping Carter Page and the Trump campaign team. There's a whole lot here. And until 7 months ago, and even today, after Gabbard was on the news yesterday calling it a treasonous conspiracy, the media still doesn't necessarily feel like covering it. But now they look like complete idiots. Like, why aren't you doing this at all?
How can you, if you are left-leaning media, okay, you are the New York Times, CNN, whatever, nearly, you know, many of the media that legacy for a long time that a lot of Americans simply put blind trust in. A lot of did not, but some did. I might have been guilty of some of that in some of these years we're talking about. But that was negligence on my point. It wasn't anything else. It was maybe laziness. But so if you're the left-leaning media, today, July 21st, this story breaks on Friday, and July 21st, there's not a story published in your entire publication, be it the New York Times or CNN, front page at CNN or anywhere on that website. It's not a story, period. It's the national intelligence director claiming maybe the biggest scandal of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't even have a story. You could have a story that has a slant to it and tries to debunk it, but to completely ignore it seems absolutely insane.
They're waiting for their deep state handlers to tell them what to write.
Yeah.
That seems, I mean, they're so ingrained in those media outlets.
They're waiting. They're waiting on
either the journalists are former intelligence themselves or connected to intelligence, the ones that break these big stories, or they are the puppets, and these are the only sources they get, are from these, you know, shady characters who are doing what I think Obama's dealings for a long time now. And we'll get a couple more texts, but we do want to hit some local stuff. And also, Leanna did some homework for us because I guess there's been some Crescent Theater drama over the weekend, a lot of Facebook drama. And I didn't have the time yesterday to really dig in, but I knew Leanna would. So
yep.
She loves that kind of thing. So she's going to tell us what was going on with the Crescent, what's going on now. Randy says, not only is George Soros and Obama major power brokers in the Democrat Party, but so is George Clooney on the West Coast front. As far as Epstein's concerned, a possible open invitation party list could be radically different than a client list, which is probably only consists of 2 to 5 individuals committed to memory only versus a paper or computer list. Yeah, I don't know if we're ever going to get any true answers for who the really bad people were that were using Epstein in order to, you know, get illegally young women, minors. I just don't, this point, it doesn't seem like that's going to come out. And it's ridiculous.
He had the land in New Mexico, too. I remember Richardson was the governor of New Mexico. Didn't he make a run at president at one time? But anyway, he's kind of out of the political sphere now.
Mm-hmm.
But You had Epstein Island. You also had New Mexico.
And you have Wexner, who people have pointed to as well. Les Wexner. So there are some names.
Good looking guy out of California.
There's so many names that are so closely connected that you have to think that. But I don't know. We'll see where it goes. I guess it'll just make for another entertaining week of news drops and redactions. As far as locally, and this news just keeps getting bigger. Like Dan was saying, the swell continues, the momentum continues growing behind people upset about the mud dumping. The Corps of Engineers taking the dredged material and basically, placing it is one way to say it. Spraying it is another way to say it, all over our local habitats here. And not only do you have what started with Baykeeper, but many others that weren't in political positions of power necessarily, but upset about this. Now you have some of our most well-known representatives who are not just saying, let's take a look at this, but angry. And I could hear some anger in State Senator Chris Elliott's voice when he was on with Jeff Poor on Friday.
He said a number of things, including he talking about the process itself. He's not a fan.
I mean, these guys have got to be made to find a different way to dispose of this material. Nobody wants to stop the dredging of the channel. Nobody wants to shut down the port. Nobody wants that to happen. But universally, almost, we want them to find an alternative method to deal with the spoil material from the dredging that's currently going on and from the maintenance dredging that will go on in this channel forever. Come up with a reasonable solution, a better solution. We've already got a spoil island out there in Gilliard Island that is there for the Theodore Industrial Canal. Let's talk about building, funding and building another one to handle this. I mean, this is not complicated. It's pretty straightforward. What's also straightforward is spraying a bunch of mud into Mobile Bay right off of Point Clear, which is what they're doing right now, is not good practice and not good policy.
It's Elliot on the Jeff Poor Show on Friday. So now it's kind of a drumbeat, and you can feel it. You can see it now suddenly that the people are speaking out against the people in actual power. Gulf Coast Media said reported last week that Fairhope may soon join Spanish Fort by La Batre, Daphne, and Gulf Shores in opposing the core dumping plan. This is municipalities, cities coming out against it. And Chris Elliott, Representatives Matt Simpson, Francis Holt Jones are backing Baykeeper's efforts. Senator Katie Britt publicly called for responsible sediment disposal, whatever that means, but at least it's something. And then, of course, Senator Tommy Tuberville also met with Baykeeper for a time. So you have more powerful people in the know and maybe beginning to lean a certain way. I don't know.
Yeah. And hopefully, this leads to at least further offshore disposal of all of that. I wanted to read this text we received earlier. This texter said, spoil from dredging is no different than the sediment that enters Mobile naturally. Every river, creek, and stream down in South Alabama are full of toxins and sewer. Literally every septic system in Alabama drains down here. And, I mean, you make a good point that everything that runs into the Gulf, we could do a much, much better job of making sure, and not to go all Greenpeace on everybody, I don't think anyone thinks that I am or anyone from this station are going to chain ourselves to a tree anytime soon. But this is our backyard. And for many of you, it's literally your backyard.
Yeah.
Like you look out back and you're looking
at the bay.
Looking at the bay or looking
at a waterway leading
part
to the bay.
The Delta. Yeah. So this affects us in so many ways. I mean, sure, it's great for the economy that you're able to more quickly make the port a little bit bigger so you can get bigger ships and things like that. But at what cost? And
also jobs.
Jobs, yeah.
I mean, we're talking about jobs. This you said, look, I'm not Greenpeace, whatever. You think the people in By La Batre, Alabama, are like card-carrying members of Greenpeace? No. They're shrimpers. They want the opportunity to do what they've done for generations down there. And shrimp, oyster, and they're losing that opportunity because of what's going on in the bay.
Yeah, so I mean, I agree with this texter that we're getting a lot of crap down here. Sometimes literally, it's running off.
Well, it's the end of the hose.
We're the end of the hose, but that doesn't mean that it's okay to do something that you can either limit or stop that's actively happening right now in the dumping of that dredge spoil. And like you said, the video that came out a couple months ago, as you know, we kept hearing people say that they're going to place the sediment, and it, you know, rhetoric means so much, especially in headlines.
Yeah, it does.
But when you see a video of this mud just being sprayed, and I'll use a scientific term here, all willy-nilly through our backyard here, that changed a lot of people's minds on this.
It did. You could hear that in Elliot's voice. You could hear it. He saw the video, and he was ticked off by the video.
Michael says, I've never understood why so-called conservatives don't want to protect their environment. That's a basic tenet of conservation. Well, you're seeing a lot of local officials, and some had already been beating the drum, but now on even higher levels. And props to State Senator Elliott. I thought that was a great appearance again on the Jeff Poor Show on Friday.
And it had meat on it, because what Elliott was saying in the second cut we played was that there could be a legislative answer to all this. I think money's the answer, maybe a legislative answer. But he's like saying, we got to find a different way to do this. I really haven't heard anybody locally be that forceful.
No. And if they're trying to cut costs, fine. But think of all the ridiculous stuff we've wasted money on in the past.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 854. One of those stories. We just had one story after another after another. It seemed like over the weekend. Evidently some drama with the Crescent Theater. In downtown Mobile. Tell us more about that. Leanna's in.
Yes. I had to do some research this weekend because I got in trouble with somebody in this room. I'm pretty sure it's a punishment, but it was entertaining anyway.
I think I looked at that as Leanna would love to dig into this story.
I got in trouble for a photo.
I saw there was some Crescent Theater drama and Facebook drama nonetheless, which, as people know, is the best kind of drama, because people can comment.
We love this.
And to go back and forth. And it was just too much for me. I said, I can't figure this all out in one night. There's too many, kind of like the whole Obama thing. There's just too many twists and turns in this. So the Crescent Theater, it was open forever.
Yes.
Loved downtown.
Yes.
Not loved enough. They weren't getting enough business. They ended up shutting things down, I guess.
And it might not have been, it may have just interjected, it might not have been run so well.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
There were some...
That's part of the reason some businesses go under. But then I know someone tried to buy it back, make it happen again. I think it shut down again.
Mm-hmm.
Either the same person or someone else bought it back. Where do we stand now?
Okay, so this is kind of like Spot of T2.
Okay.
It's the sequel. I did a lot of research. Rob Morris from Mobile Pirate Radio talked to Trey Williams, who is the manager at Crescent Theater, and a podcast, and the theater, it's open up. It's been showing the new Superman.
Mm.
And by the way, you can BYOB in this theater.
Oh, still?
In my research, that's what I found out. He went on this podcast saying that customers have been impressed. He actually had somebody come in and say they want to come and watch movies on their lunch break. They're going to ask their boss for more time. Also, he said that there's a deal, he's working on a deal with Amtrak.
Oh.
For people that come over on the train from Mobile.
Yeah. Why not?
They may want to watch a movie.
Come to
Mobile
to watch a movie you can't see in New Orleans. That makes sense.
That's what I would do after a 4-hour train ride.
Right, exactly. And he also talked about a film festival because he has ties in Los Angeles with the School of Media Technology.
Okay.
And he wanted to go in front of the city council and put together a Mobile media technology school and have the city pay for it.
So what's the drama here? Because I heard, I guess, the owner, I heard there were padlocks on the door.
Okay,
what's this about?
So he had all these plans, was putting them in. He had no contract. He had no insurance.
Oh.
On this. With no contract.
This
with
is the people after the
Trey Williams with Mini Flex.
Okay, all
right.
Okay.
Right. And so he had a comedy club, Mobile Comedy, came in, and they were wanting to put together,
a show.
A show.
Uh-huh.
And talk to him, but apparently the talks were slow. And so what happened was they talked to the owner.
Okay. Kind of went behind his back.
Well, that's what he's saying. But they've come back and said that in a post saying, no, Comedy Mobile did not initiate or force any ownership or management changes. They are approaching it to bring back live entertainment in downtown Mobile.
It's still owned by the same guy that owned it back when it was managed by somebody else.
Yes.
Right? And there's ties to Pensacola, I think, the owner. That's what I remember.
Yes.
He lived in Pensacola.
Mr. Switzer.
Okay. All right.
Yes. And so there's
sounds like a guy out of a sitcom from the 80s. Hello, Mr. Switzer.
Yeah, it's very crazy that they are saying that they didn't have a backroom deal with Mr. Switzer, but that Mr. Switzer also didn't have a deal with Mr. Williams,
who is
now.
So there's nothing in writing?
So Mr. Williams here was the one that was running these new shows, new movies.
Yes.
But he didn't have any actual signed documents,
or
I guess,
insurance.
He was running things. So then you have this comedy group, he says, came in behind his back. They said that's not the case.
Yes.
Long and short of it, can you go today and watch Superman right now at Crescent Theater? No.
I went down there yesterday, and they have chains and locks on the doors, so you can't.
They're playing Superman. As it turns out, the only one who could get in to watch would be Superman. So thank you, Leanna. 8:59 with Dan and Dalton.